This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Hey, how you be? Happy Valentine's Day. Happy birthday to Jim Kelly. Happy birthday to Drew Bledsoe on this 14th of February. As we get started here on One Bills Live on a Tuesday, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, as we typically are. And Steve, we are just 2 weeks away from the NFL Combine. The NFL calendar is a nonstop downhill roller coaster that never goes uphill.
Yeah.
It is always careening at breakneck speed. With 2 weeks from the Combine, we're going to be in Indy in 2 weeks, Steve.
Tentpole event. Let's go.
It's crazy.
We're going to be there, and you know, a couple hundred college athletes and all the scouts, all the GMs, all the coaches. It's like, yeah, you can set your watch by it.
I don't know why.
You certainly set your calendar by it.
I always like going to the Combine because it's just kind of just forces you to kind of kickstart your preparation for the draft and all that stuff. But it's also where, you know, negotiations will begin in earnest for NFL clubs with player agents for re-signing their own prospective free agents, maybe kicking the tires on some guys that could be hitting the market. You also got to talk to player agents on your for players on your roster who you may need to restructure, stuff like that. So, yeah, there's a lot of business gets done because you're very close to the end of the league year and the start of the new league year when a lot of these teams, including the Bills, are going to have to get under the salary cap figure, and a lot of them are over. So, yeah, it's going to be a very newsworthy NFL Combine this year, maybe even more so than others. League-wide,
and
not just with the Bills.
And the interesting thing is that in this day and age, the team with the top draft pick is almost always looking for a QB. Not so much this year. The Bears have got the top draft pick. They've got Justin
Fields.
Right. So, but the Bears have got to make it seem like we might take a quarterback.
Well, there's two ways I think the Bears can look at that. They could say Fields is our guy.
Right.
And we're going to trade out of that spot for a King's ransom, load up on some more picks and draft capital, and really fill out this roster around Justin Fields.
Which is what they should do.
That is probably what they should do. But I would say, I don't know if this is a strong enough argument against it. It's an argument. I just don't know if it's a very strong one. If you want to reset the clock on your rookie quarterback contract so you can spend money elsewhere on your roster, maybe you trade Justin Fields, hold on to the top pick, use Fields to acquire draft capital, draft a quarterback that you this, and you would only entertain this if you believe that you have a quarterback in this class that can be as good and has maybe even a higher ceiling than Justin Fields. Then you might entertain trading Fields to get the draft capital that you could also get by trading out of the top spot. And then you draft your quarterback one, use everything you acquire draft capital-wise by shipping Justin Fields out, and then you're really starting over.
Yeah.
There's more than one way to skin
a
cat.
Sure. And we've seen teams try all of them in years past. I think you give Fields some help. I think you try and trade out of that, get all the draft picks you can, pick some guys, and let's go, you know?
Yeah, I would move out of that spot, especially if you're keeping Fields. Move out of the spot, get a couple get an extra one, depending on what team is coming up from where.
Yeah.
You wouldn't only get their one, whether it's at 11 or 12. You're probably getting a high two, maybe a couple of twos.
And next year's one?
I mean,
right?
I think it's all on the table, depending how far back that team's coming up to take your top spot.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, if you're trading with the guy at five, he's probably flipping you a two, and that's it. You know, but if it's a team at 12, now we're talking.
Right.
You know, so, and there are a handful of teams that have two first rounders this year. I know Seattle is one, Philly is another. I'm trying to just remember off the top of my head because I don't have the first round order in front of me.
Or what do you do if you're the if I'm the Arizona Cardinals, I flip with the Bears and take a quarterback and get rid of Kyler Murray.
Monty Ossenfort, new GM, going to jump up to one, take a Q. You could get a QB at three, conceivably.
Yeah.
You always run the risk of somebody leapfrogging you. Indy could do it because they're hard up for a QB.
Oh,
so
sure.
Indy could leapfrog Arizona very easily.
Look, you've got Bryce Young, Will Levi, C.J. Stroud, Hendon Hooker, Tanner McKee. Those are all the quarterbacks. Tanner McKee, 6'6", 230, all the measurables, right? But he played at Stanford. Then you've got Hendon Hooker, Tennessee, who's 6'4", 208.
Yeah.
C.J. Stroud, 6'3", 218, all these guys. Bryce Young is 6 foot, a buck 95. That's barely more than what I weighed when I played. At quarterback?
I mean, he's a really smart player. Definitely has an arm, but, yeah, he is rail thin. He terrifies me for durability. He's still going to go high because of his football IQ. And his athletic ability, but, man, you better have a monster offensive line in front of that kid.
C.J. Stroud, to me,
is
a really intriguing prospect.
Yeah. Anthony Richardson's the big boomer bust kid. People
right.
are already saying,
6'4",
is he the next Josh
230.
Allen? 230.
Played Florida.
Anthony Richardson, in his Florida career, has never had a 300-yard passing game. Think about how wide open the college game is now.
Right.
He has never had a 300-yard passing game. And he has never had a single game in which he's completed 60% of his passes. Forget about a season.
Well,
he is a traits pick, but he is the biggest boomer bust quarterback in this draft.
He's one of those guys that Josh Allen made possible.
Oh, they're already drawing the commitment. Oh, is this guy the next Josh Allen? You know, they're doing that already. I don't think the Cardinals, as much as they may want, we'll move on from Kyler Murray. They just signed him to the monster extension last offseason.
Oh, gosh, I would get out of that so fast.
You can't. They don't have an out in that contract until 2028.
That's so dumb, man. Why would you?
Dead cap hit if you moved him off your roster this year, Steve. Are you ready? $97 million.
He gets an A in the business side of the game.
Well, his agent does,
the quarterback side.
That is Ugo City. Because I don't think you can win with that guy. I really don't. Around the NFL we go, Steve, which is presented by Collider Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. And we begin with coaching news, as there is only one open coaching job remaining. The Indianapolis Colts, in short order, named Eagles offensive coordinator Shane Steichen their new head coach. He already had his press conference last hour. Introducing him. That was quick. I don't even know if the guy had time to buy a suit for that press conference. I know you weren't exactly thrilled with his threads.
His threads were okay. He needed, was he going to shave or not?
I'm going to go with no.
Yeah.
That's just
me being an old guy.
Sure. Yeah, that was the first time I ever saw him without a baseball hat on.
Well,
you know,
he's a football coach. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, 7 days a week in sweats. I get it. I'm surprised that some fashion-forward company has not designed the sweatsuit suit. You know what I mean?
The upscale.
For coaches or for big guys. You know, a lot of offensive and defensive linemen, they don't like how confining a traditional suit feels.
Right.
Make a sweatsuit and cut it like a suit. What about, you like that idea? I think it would be pretty, I think it could be revolutionary.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to talk to my daughter about that one. See if she can get her friends down at FIT to work on that.
Something.
Get some design students going on that thing. It could be on to something there. Raiders and Derek Carr are expected to part ways today officially.
Still haven't.
Have until 4 o'clock today. Otherwise, they got to pay him $40 million. Somehow, I think that's going to get done. Even in the myriad of ways that the Raiders can screw things up, which they have royally, by the way, with how they handled this whole Derek Carr thing to begin with, since they're going to have to release him to save $40 million on their books and do it for nothing in return. Now they're bad-mouthing him, saying, He doesn't have enough guts to hang in the pocket.
Yeah, he's not strong. He's not strong enough.
I will say, I don't know if that's totally incorrect, because he gets hit three or four times early in a game. He doesn't play the same way. So I believe there is some measure of merit to that statement.
I got an idea. Why don't you build your offense around a guy like that? Where,
well,
you know, you don't
drafting
you don't
some offensive linemen
get rid of the ball a little quicker, like everybody else in the league at the top of the league's doing, and maybe you do that.
Yeah, maybe you do.
You know,
help
instead
your quarterback
of, instead
out.
Of coughing up, starting from scratch with another quarterback. Who are they going to get? Who are they going
to
get?
I don't know. Is McDaniels on the phone with Brady already, telling him to come out of retirement again? I don't see that happening.
I don't either.
You know who the Raiders will get? Jimmy G.
Jimmy G's way better than Derek Carr. They're the same guy.
I don't think he's even as good as Derek Carr is.
He's not as good. Come on.
But, you know, it's the whole Patriot connection thing. He's already got Jarrett Stidham on the roster. You know, he was the backup last year.
Good for him.
It's like the whole inner circle that you talk about with the Patriots coaching staff.
The circle of trust.
It's the same thing with McDaniels over there in Las Vegas now.
It's the circle of trust. I get it. I mean, I wonder if, and I guess it probably is, that the Patriots have their coaches before they leave. They have to sign non-disclosures.
A couple of NDAs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess they do.
Put it past them.
For
a second.
You can't tell anybody what we do, and you can't. Yeah, and you can't talk about the fact that you signed a non-disclosure.
Not for a second would I put it past that organization. They wouldn't even think twice about that. We'll see what the Raiders decide to do. Where are they picking the draft? They're got to be. They didn't make the playoffs, so they're probably somewhere between 10 and 12. Oh, no, they were worse than that. Are they in the top 10? They might be in the top 10.
I had that up, and I can't. I'll find it real quick. Go ahead.
I'm just curious.
I am, too. They're not.
Yeah, they're ninth. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, seventh. Seventh. They could have a look at that. Might have to trade up to do it. But they pick seventh. Like it.
Right.
They'll make it interesting for sure. So there's that. There'll be another team to watch. Other NFL news, coaching news, that is. The Ravens have hired a new offensive coordinator. It's former University of Georgia offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach Todd Monken, who also has time in the league as a coordinator. He was with the Bucs from 2016 to 2018 and with the Browns in 2019. So back for a second stint in the NFL after winning back-to-back national titles with the Georgia Bulldogs. So he goes to the Ravens, Steve. And I wonder what kind of sell job you'd have to give Todd Monken. Obviously, they have to convince him that they will have Lamar Jackson on the roster next year. Because why would you go to Baltimore if you're not sure they're going to have Lamar, right?
Money.
I wouldn't take it.
Might be money.
An awful lot of money.
Well, yeah, and it might be that he's wants to advance his career and get a chance at it, and you know that by doing something in that spot, you got a chance. You would be a really hot commodity if you can put that offense over the top.
I'd feel better about my chances, though, if I knew definitively Lamar was going to be there. So I
anticipate Lamar or somebody else. I mean, you got
short of everything else, though. They're probably franchising him anyway, so he'll be there,
right?
Conceivably, the next question is: are you going to add some weapons to put around him? It's basically Mark Andrews and a bunch of guys,
right?
As far as offensive weapons go in Baltimore, they've, much like people criticize the Bills for, you know, right or wrong, for not using enough high draft choices on offensive linemen, people in Baltimore lambaste the Ravens for not investing enough assets in their receiving core. Now, I don't know if that's completely fair. They drafted Marquise Hollywood Brown high. They drafted Rashad Bateman as a first-round pick out of Minnesota. He's just been injury-riddled his first 2 years. So there are some examples of them investing high in receiver talent. They just haven't panned out. And it was due in part to the fact that Greg Roman was running an offense that was catered to Lamar Jackson's running abilities more than his passing abilities.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to change too much. I mean, they're going to have to do what Lamar does best.
Oh, you don't think it's going to change much? I wouldn't be surprised, Steve.
They may try.
Tell me if you completely disagree with my theory. I think Lamar quietly behind the scenes voiced some disappointment with the offensive system. While it caters to his abilities as a runner, I think he feels it limits him as a passer. And not only that, it discourages free agent receivers from coming to Baltimore to play. Because they don't want to go play somewhere where they got to block all day.
And Hollywood Brown was probably in there going, you know what, I'm out of here.
That's what he said last year.
You need to trade
me. I'm not playing in this offense. Send me somewhere. And they sent him to Arizona. So I wonder if Lamar...
It puts the coaches in a hard spot.
Well, I wonder if Lamar kind of precipitated the move we saw at OC and said, hey, get me somebody that can help me in the passing game so we could be a more prolific offense and I'm not taking as many shots as a runner. He hasn't finished the last two seasons.
Okay.
Well, now, and also the byproduct of that is maybe you convince a few more free agent receivers to come sign with you. Hey, we got a new offense. We are going to throw the ball. We promise. Got Lamar here. Got a dynamic top, you know, 5, 6, 7 quarterback, whatever you want to say. You know, come on in and take a run at this thing.
Right.
So, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if that kind of was the impetus. And, again, much the way they catered to Lamar on his first contract as a rookie and built the offense around what he did best at the time, which was run the football, I wonder now if this is the second iteration of that, catering to Lamar again to hold on to him and to diversify and modernize the offense into more of a passing attack. And Monken can certainly do that based on his history. We also have Derek Carr, we talked about already. We know that. How about the Super Bowl TV rating, Steve? Did you see that?
Yes, I did.
It averaged, there was a lot of averaged 113 million viewers.
Who would have thought? There's a lot of people watching the Super Bowl. 108. It peaked at 118 plus million.
Yeah.
Between 8 and 8:15. And that's a big number.
Well, and it was the third most watched Super Bowl of all time, and it was due in part to the fact that it was a close game throughout. That always helps.
Yeah.
So, man, that's something else. Speaking of Ravens offensive coordinators, former Ravens offensive coordinator Greg Roman is interviewing in Washington with the Commanders to possibly be their new OC. He seems to be in direct competition with Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy, who might be looking to make a lateral move out of Kansas City. He's interviewing for that Washington position as well. I don't know what to think about that. It's an interesting set of circumstances in Washington because they have said they're going to be throwing Carson Wentz overboard after a year. Where have we heard that before? And... they're not going to start Taylor Heineke. They're going with their draft pick from a year ago, Sam Howell, out of North Carolina. He is their quarterback going forward. That is the plan. So if it was up to you, as you're Ron Rivera, Steve, with a second-year quarterback set to become a first-year starter, would you rather have Roman or Bieniemy?
I'd rather have Roman.
Rather have Roman.
Yeah.
He proved he could do it with Lamar, right?
Yeah. I'd rather have Roman. He can protect the guy.
Well, you know he'll build a running game to help him, right?
Yeah. I mean, you'd have – here's the thing, too, that people don't – Baltimore went all in on Lamar. They were going to run the ball and do something different than every other offense. And they got some mileage out of the fact that nobody saw offenses on a week-to-week basis like the one they ran. So they did get some help for that. The teams weren't built to stop Baltimore. So they really had to play left-handed defensively to get a handle on what Baltimore was doing, but they were limited. It's an interesting thing. Eric Bieniemy doesn't get much credit for what's going on in Kansas City because, you know, Andy Reid and Mahomes get the credit, even though Bieniemy is the offensive coordinator. And you can see Bieniemy over there. I mean, he's neck deep in what they're doing, no question about it. So he deserves probably more credit than he gets for the Kansas City offense. And it's exactly what happened with Sean McDermott when he was working for Andy Reid and he couldn't get a job, a head coaching interview, and Andy Reid said, you need to leave. So Andy Reid let him go. The next year he's a defensive coordinator at Carolina, and now he's a Bills head coach.
Right.
That's maybe what's going on with Eric Bieniemy to a certain extent. If Eric Bieniemy can go and do it anywhere else other than Kansas City at a high level, then, you know, that'll – be a huge step in, you know, having him get a head coaching job.
Yeah. So that's that, and we'll see what comes of it. So really all you have left now is the Arizona head coaching job is the only open position for head coach left, and that's down to Cincinnati defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo and Philadelphia defensive coordinator Jonathan Gannon. And interesting that the Cardinals appear to be headed in the direction of hiring a defensive-minded head coach, but knowing that their defense finished 31st in points allowed, seems like new GM Monty Ossenfort believes they need to fix the defense and quick. So that's probably the direction they are going to go if the two finalists we've heard reported are the only two finalists in the running for that job. That is Around the NFL, presented by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. Bit of sad news to report. Former Bills, Cardinals, and Saints guard Conrad Dobler, a three-time Pro Bowl lineman, passed away at the age of 72 yesterday. So sad to hear that news. Played for the Bills for a while, more towards the end of his career. And wasn't he like a wild man? Wasn't he a little...
He was the dirtiest player in pro football.
Okay.
That was his calling card. And they, yeah, he was, he owned it.
He didn't shy away from it?
He owned it. He played for the Cardinals for a long, played alongside Dan Dierdorf, who everybody will know is a former
broadcaster.
Yeah. He was, I talk about, you know, what the game was like back in the 60s and 70s. It was brutal, and guys like him were the reasons for it.
Yeah.
Now, he's a sweetheart of a guy off the field, good sense of humor and all that, but, man, he would do whatever he could get away with on the field and was notorious for it. Now, he's a little bit before my time, so I don't want to talk out of school, but that's what he was called, the dirtiest player in pro football. In a game where today, by today's standards, 95% of the guys playing pro football back then would be the dirtiest player today. He held the record then, or held that moniker then. So that it was, he was famous for that. He was one of the guys. Also, he's a personality that was in the Taste Great Less Filling beer ads as well. So he's one of those guys. That's how famous he was for being that guy.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Okay. All right. The only other thing that kind of came out of the Super Bowl was, you know, James Bradberry right after the game said, yeah, I did hold Juju Smith-Schuster on that play, tried to get away with it, thought I could. So he has commented further on it, Steve. He said, I feel like I only had two options, really. I could take responsibility for it or I could blame it on someone else. I try not to live that way. Comes from my mom or coaches in the past I've had. Taking accountability. So I'll tip my hat to a guy like that, especially in defeat, to be that honest and self-effacing, self-critical. Kudos to James Bradberry. There are too few people around like that that'll own up and take the brunt of the criticism. So good on him. I'll just throw that in there.
Right.
Topic of discussion today is an interesting one. Okay, we've got this up on the tweet sheet for you already. If you want to comment there, otherwise you can call us at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. How much responsibility should be placed on Josh Allen in the Bills' offense for 2023? And what we mean by that is how much of the offensive load should he undertake? Steve and I crunched some numbers before the show today, and we found out that in 2022, Josh Allen accounted for 79% of Buffalo's offense. So does that number sound about right to you, or do you think it should be more, the same, or less in 2023? You let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. And in case you're wondering, Josh Allen did not have the highest percentage of his team's offense last season. As a matter of fact, based on the numbers we crunched, he was fifth at 79%. There were four quarterbacks ahead of him who represented more of their team's total offense.
And it might be obvious to who they are. the top in the league was Joe Burrow with 82% of their offense.
Which doesn't sound much more than Josh, but I don't know why. Once you get over 80, it seems like a really fat number.
Yeah, nobody else is over 80, and Burrow's 82%.
Yeah.
The second guy was
Justin Herbert
at 79.9, right
so
at 80%.
Basically 80%.
And then the third one was Pat Mahomes, 79.7%.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth one was Tom Brady, Tampa Bay, 79.6.
Well, they never ran the ball either. So
that's right. So their quarterback's going to throw it all over the yard anyway. And then fifth was our boy Josh Allen at 79.3% of the yardage of the offense. So at take what you will. I think some of the more better takes I've seen on this from people saying, it says, yeah, I get it. I'd rather see Josh throw for 5,200 than throw for 4,800 and run for 400. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Most people would love to see him throw the football for all the yards rather than run it as much as he does. Although I think in tough spots or in certain situations, that's the way to go. And certainly it can be when you pull it down on a pass play and run it. I'm all for that. And I'll say this. You can go around in this circle a lot, Brownie. People think you got to stay healthy. I mean, look at Lamar Jackson. He's a running quarterback, hasn't finished the last two seasons. Kyler Murray, same thing. He got nicked up this year. Quarterbacks that go down and get hurt, it's a thing. All of Josh Allen's injuries in his career have all come in the pocket.
Yeah.
All of them.
Well, hold on a second. He didn't miss a game because of it. But against the Patriots in his second season, 2019, he did sustain a concussion on a scramble, but played the next week. That was out of the pocket. He went running and he got it. So that's the only one. But he didn't miss any time with that.
He didn't miss a game. Well, he missed the rest of that game. Yes, that's correct. But the elbow injuries, the one in Houston in 18.
Correct.
The one this year, he didn't miss any time for that one. But that's it. He has not been hurt running outside the pocket. It's been in the pocket that he's done that. And so it's a double-edged sword, you know. Do you want him to run and taking all those shots, or do you want him standing in the pocket when he's not expecting a shot and getting one unexpectedly, you know, and having his elbow torqued and or his knee rolled into or whatever. So it's an interesting philosophy. An interesting take on it. But he's not out of line with the percentage of yardage that he has or is responsible for the Bills' offense. So I'm kind of good where it is. I don't have a problem with it at all. I get the fact that might want to distribute it a little differently, maybe have him run less and throw more. And you always get the people who chime in and say, wow, we should run the ball better, run the ball. Nah, not really. They run it fine, yeah. In my opinion. Same mix. I like where they're at. I got to say, right around that 78 to 80%, 79 to 81% of the offense is where your quarterback needs to be if he's going to be elite, and that's where Josh is.
Josh Allen was responsible for 79.3% of the Bills' offense this past season. What should it be in 2023, and why? You think it should be more, the same, or maybe a little bit less? Maybe you want to take the load off of Josh a little bit. You let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. I can tell you in early polling on Twitter, our Twitter poll, almost 72%, Steve, believe it should be less than 79.3%. Almost 20% believe it should be the same. And a little over 8% say it should be more. What do you say? 803-0550, the local number to get on board. 1-888-550-2550, the toll-free number for outside the calling area. Got open lines for you. Hit us up on the phones or fire one off on the tweet sheet. Steve and I take a break here, but we're back with your phone calls and tweets next on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Oh, All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and we are talking Josh Allen and the percentage of Buffalo's offense that he represents. Last season, 79.3% of Buffalo's offense in terms of total net yards for the season. So with that in mind, we are asking you today, what should it be in 2023 and why? More, the same, or less than 79.3%? You can let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board, or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. We go to the phones, and leading us off today is Russ in Angola. What do you got for us, Russ? You're on One Bills Live.
Taking my call, Chris and Steve.
Sure.
I really appreciate it. And first one off, I love it. So anyway, I heard you guys talking about Allen running and running quarterbacks. And then Steve said something about our running game was adequate. I disagree with that. I think if the Bills had a guy like, say, Saquon Barkley or the guy from Cleveland, I think it's Nick Chubb, or even Ezekiel Elliott, a big bruiser in the backfield, I think defenses would think twice that, oh, they're going to run or maybe do the pass run option or whatever. And it would take a little of the burden off of Allen to run all the time. Or even the defense thinking, well, if anyone's going to run, it's going to be Allen because he leads the team in rushing. I mean, does that make any sense?
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, I don't know who you're comparing it to, but the Bills were number two in the league in yards per rush. They were number seven in the league in yards rushing per game. I get it. If you don't want Josh to be a part of that and you want somebody else to do it, that's one thing. But I don't know. There's not that many teams who run it better than the Bills do. I mean, that's just kind of where the league is right now.
They just don't run it with a high degree of frequency.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I'll accept that. But if you want Allen to run less and last longer,
Yeah. You
need a running back in the backfield that's going to take away some of that burden, we'll call it.
Yeah.
But so let's get back to Steve said something there that I find interesting, and I can't remember what it was. But I'm going to get back to this past season. First game of the season, we went out and kicked the crap out of the Super Bowl champs, L.A. Second game, I believe, was against Tennessee,
Yep. The
Titans. One of our nemesis, we beat I believe Henry had like 12 yards rushing that game. We beat the crap out of them. Then we went down to Miami, and the team baked in the sun for 3.5 hours, whatever it was.
They were also missing six starters.
I get that. I understand that. But let's just use Allen, strictly Allen. We'll talk about him for an example. After that game, I don't think Allen ever recovered from that heat stroke or whatever you want to call it on his brain, however you want to name it. I don't think he was the same player after that game for the rest of the year. His decisions weren't the same. He wasn't, you know, he's got that one play from that he was jumping up in the air as he was going out of bounds and he hit Davis with that touchdown pass. I mean, he did do something similar. He did have moments, but he wasn't, in my opinion, he was definitely not the same player after that Miami game. And I think it was the heat that really it just drained him and he never recovered from it. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I would tend to think that it had more to do with his elbow injury in week 9. He was different after that. So much so that the offense and Ken Dorsey had to shift the focus of the attack to a shorter passing attack with less pass attempts, more running attempts. I mean, they ran the ball more than they threw it in the win over Cleveland, which I believe was the very next game after the Jets game. So the elbow was an issue after week 9 injury against the Jets. So if you want to argue that, I'm on board with that because I think it did change him ever so slightly. And then it wasn't until the very tail end of the season where we started seeing him chucking the ball around and not being afraid to let it rip. Not to say he was afraid to let it rip prior to that, but I think the team was very cautious with the condition of his elbow going forward. I mean, we have since learned that he took a PRP injection to try to stimulate and promote faster healing of the UCL ligament, which was partially torn but not fully torn. And he was taking a risk every time he was going out there to play. So I would argue that that was the time where things changed for him. And it would line up with what we heard from Stephon Diggs, Steve, at the Super Bowl last week and all the interviews that he did. He felt like after week 9, they were finding ways to win, different ways to win, but they weren't the same. And they weren't nearly as convincing when they were winning, you know, down the stretch in the second half of the season. Then you have injuries like, you know, losing Von Miller and the defense changes and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the, you know, the Dolphins game, and then the Bills came back and they barely beat Baltimore. But then, you know, you had that Pittsburgh game where it was 38-3 and the Bills were flying high. He's throwing the ball all over the yard. They go into Kansas City and beat the Chiefs. They beat Green Bay by 10 after the bye. I don't know. He had more than moments, I think. But in the Week 9 thing against the Jets, yeah, that I think that really that changed things for him.
Yeah.
The
second Miami game, he put the team on his back. I mean, he put the Superman cape on at the end of that game to win 32-29 on a last-second field goal. I mean, the Bills didn't have a fantastic game as a team. I mean, they put up 29 on the Bills in their own building.
Right.
So it's not like the team as a whole was playing great. Josh won them that game against Miami, 32-29. I mean, he put the cape on and was a superhero in that game. So, and that was down the stretch, you know, after he was probably like 5-6 weeks removed from the elbow injury when he started feeling better. So, but yeah, it's a valid concern. Maybe take some of the burden off of Josh so he's not.
And
so he doesn't have to be 79-80% of the offense.
If you can find, and listen, I'm all about it. If you can find a guy like a Derrick Henry who's different than everybody else, right? He's 6'4", 230, and can outrun everybody on the field, and he's like, it's like trying to tackle, you know, butcher knives. I mean, you don't want to be part of it. If you can find one of those guys, and you get one of those guys that, you know, defenders are coming up and shying away from contact. Yeah. The Bills haven't had one of those guys for a while, maybe not since Marshawn Lynch.
Right. But once again, Steve, you know, he's mentioning all these free agent running backs that could be out there, and it's a deep class. Do you want to invest that kind of a money in a running back position when he might not get more than 12, 15 carries a game? That's not who the Bills are offensively. He's not going to get the ball.
I'd much rather invest it in another weapon on the outside, pass catcher.
That's where I kind of come down on it.
I'm most of the running backs. I would say this. I don't want to exaggerate, or I'll just make the point. There are probably fan bases out there outside the Bills fan base who are saying, "Well, you know, Devin Singletary was a pretty good back for the Bills, and they were a playoff team all those years. Maybe we should get him, right?" Just like the Bills are looking at all the running backs on the free agent market and thinking there's somebody in there who's different than all the other guys. I don't know that there is.
Don't get me wrong. Saquon Barkley is on the free agent market, and he's an unbelievable talent, but he's going to get paid $11, $12 million a year. The Bills can't sweat that.
Right.
And I don't think I don't think you'll ever get that value back based on what you are as an offense. Maybe you tweak and change things slightly. If you have Barkley on your roster, maybe you do tweak the offense to take advantage of his talents a little bit more. But in the end, the only way you're beating teams like the Chiefs is by throwing the football just like they do.
Right.
Look at what the Eagles did. They were right there. Don't get me wrong. They played good offensively. They were right there. They were largely a running team.
And
they tried to run their way to a Super Bowl, and they came up short.
And they gave up, you know, they gave up a fumble return for a touchdown as well, and a long punt return that gave the Chiefs a free shot at it as well. So the Eagles had the right recipe, just like the Bills have had the right recipe going into Kansas City the last couple of years, with the 13 seconds, and then going into the regular season and beating them there as well by four. That's where you're going to do it with the Kansas City Chiefs. So that was the right recipe. They just, you know, they missed a couple of plays, and that's all it takes. It is an intriguing question for a talent like Saquon Barkley. If the Bills go in on Saquon Barkley and say, all right, we'll give you a one-year deal for 12, and he says yes because he thinks maybe he could be the difference, is that better than paying like Juju Smith-Schuster 10?
No.
Right. I mean,
it's not. And there's no way Barkley's taking that. Running back careers are too short. He wants to get the longest, fattest contract he can find, not a one-year deal where if he blows his knee out in the first year, his career is over, and he's not making any kind of money ever again. He's already got one ACL injury.
But
so,
you could sell that to some guy, though, if you got a Saquon
not the
Barkley,
caliber of a Barkley.
Come on, Saquon, you're the thing that's going to put us over the top. You come in here for 1 year, win a Super Bowl with an outside chance at getting the MVP of a Super Bowl with Josh and being the guy that kind of puts us over the top, then hit free agency again next year.
Too big a risk.
It is a risk.
I can't see him doing it. Not with already one ACL tear on his resume. It's not good business for the player.
Right.
It's great business for
now
the Bills.
Yeah, it depends.
It's not
on,
good business for the player.
It depends on what else is out there as well.
And it's a deep running
right.
back market.
It's a deep
he's
running
the top,
back
he's
market.
At the top of it.
That's right.
But
my point is, so he's going to take, you're telling somebody will give him a two-year deal or a four-year deal.
I think he's looking for like three or four years at least.
Well, if it's out there, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What if it's not?
Might not be. We'll have to see.
But all I'm saying is, he gets to sign a four-year deal with nothing guaranteed and a signing bonus.
Yeah.
I mean, you get that from the Bills. You know he's going to see all of that first-year money.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's an interesting question, but I'm with you. I would rather see a high-end outside
another
receiver
weapon.
Than a running back.
Josh Allen was responsible for 79% of the Bills' offense this past season. What should it be in 2023 and why? More, the same, or less? You let us know at 803-0551, 888-550-2550. Jerry and Tonawanda, Butch on the east side. You guys are next when we come back here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Going to go right back to the phones at 803-0550, and we begin with Jerry in Tonawanda. What do you got for us, Jerry?
Well, you were talking about the importance of Josh Allen on the offense, and I totally agree that he's the key piece. But I've always been frustrated by the Bills' lack of use, or maybe not more use, of the tight end and like a slot receiver like Cole Beasley. If you look at the success that Brady had over the years, he always had Gronkowski in the picture. And then the Super Bowl, where we saw Kelce become a key part of their offense, I'm just frustrated that the Bills don't do more to get the tight end involved. And boy, they need a guy like Cole Beasley, because it seems to me that he pulled them out of a lot of problems last year when he was playing. And so I would think that, yeah, it's a given that Allen is the basic building block, but I think we needed to look at a slot receiver and a tight end more in the coming years. And that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks,
yeah,
Jerry.
I know it's not a hot take or sexy to say it, but the Bills don't have too many problems on offense. They were number two in scoring this year behind Kansas City, and they beat Kansas City in their own building. Yeah, you can say it looks different than you see Kansas City's offense look, because Travis Kelce's a singular talent. It's going to look different when he's out there. Dawson Knox is a really good tight end, and a lot of teams would love to have him, and the Bills knew that. That's why they extended him. Cole Beasley, yeah. They did up until the time Jamison Crowder got his leg busted. They understand all of that, but a lot of the plans that they would put in place to make the offense look a little bit more like we all wish it would look were sabotaged this year by instances and things, circumstances that were beyond their control to begin with. And even in spite of those things, they played really well. Even in the face of 27 turnovers, they played really well. They were hard to beat. They lost three games by a total of 8 points. And one of them, the Miami game, and the Minnesota game shouldn't have been lost, and neither should the Miami game. So I'm, you know, just it was, it's unbelievable to think, you know, they could have been 15-1, even with the, or 14-2, or 14-1. What am I trying to say? 15-1, even with the game that was canceled, 15-1 after 16 games, and been the one seed. But that's where it should have been. And you can throw darts at whatever you want about how they looked and all that. I mean, I get it. We're in that kind of mode right now because they looked terrible in their last game offensively. Scored 10 points. Brownie and I have been talking about that for weeks about why we think that happened, and it had nothing to do with the philosophy or the play calling or any of that stuff. This team was really good offensively last year. Josh was a big part of it. We've heard people, and all of us have said, I mean, Brownie and I both said it. You know, you don't want them to start playing. They play too much hero ball, where Josh is trying to go deep all the time, deep all the time. You don't want Josh on the field, and you want him to be responsible for it, but he's taking easier completion. He threw too many interceptions. They had too many drop balls. And that basically was the crux of the problems for me. It didn't have anything to do with Gabe Davis not being good enough. It didn't have anything to do with Cole Beasley not being used enough, and none of that stuff. They had plenty of options, but they turned it over, and they dropped passes. And if they wouldn't have done any of that, they would have been number one in scoring this year. So I get it. I mean, when we broke down these numbers, I kind of figured it would be there, and it was. Josh is one of those top five guys where the offense runs through him a lot. But the others are the same guy. Joe Burrow, Pat Mahomes, Josh Allen, Tom Brady,
Justin Herbert.
And Jalen Hurts was down in the 67%. It was just over two-thirds.
That's because they run the ball so much. That's why.
And they also played in a cruddy, deficient conference in a bad division and Jalen Hurts was forced to throw it 22 total times in the regular season in the second half of games where he wasn't in the lead. Mm-hmm. 22 attempts in the entire season in the second half of games where he didn't have the lead. 22. So don't tell me they were all this great. They wouldn't have made it into the second round of the playoffs in the NFC, AFC. Jacksonville might have beaten them.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I mean, good grief. I mean, I'm going off here. Philly's a good team, and they deserved all. But they had a cakewalk of a season.
Yeah, they had no adversity.
They had a cakewalk of a season. A weak schedule, weak quarterbacks, horrible quarterbacks.
That they faced, yeah.
And they could run the ball whenever they wanted to because they were never under any pressure to score points like they were against Kansas City. So you say what you want. The Bills are right where they need to be with Josh. And I'm all about this. Keep it at 80% or right just around 80% of the yards in the game are his arm or his legs. Stay right there. And if you want to distribute it a little more to somebody else on the run game, fine. And have him throw it more. Okay, I'm all about that.
Yeah.
But man, oh man, this offense. You're saying, well, we're splitting hairs here, folks. They're doing a lot of things right, maybe everything right. But they got injured, and they had a catastrophic event that zapped their brains and self-admittedly.
And they turned it over too.
And they turned it over. Other than that, they were the preseason team to beat, and they would have been the team to beat at the end of it too. So
and still won 13 games.
And they,
in the regular season.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff where, but that's the game. That's the league. That's the league. Man, you're going to go through that. You're going to get injured. Somebody else is not. The ball's going to bounce perfectly into the Chiefs linebacker's hands, and for you, the guy boots it around, and then somebody else, guy falls back on top of it. You know, so that's just the way the league is, and that's kind of what we sign up for as fans of this stinking thing.
Let's get back to the phones and go to Butch on the east side. What do you got for us, Butch?
First of all, good afternoon to both of you. You know I love both of you. I love GR and your staff. I want to say happy Valentine's Day, and not only to your wives, but to all the ladies who listen to your radio show.
Yeah.
I want to say that first.
Butch, giving it up to the ladies. Nice.
Yeah, you know we got to do that. You know, Brownie, you know we got to be respectful of gentlemen.
Oh, I know.
But listen, I got a couple things. And I'm going to listen to the rest of the show, which is good. Right now, we got a little air that came out the bottle this year. Well, the whole NFL is looking at it. Some people look at it as a failure. Some people look at it as okay. You know, they're there, but they might not make it. But let's look at what we have in the kitchen, in the cabinets. Right now, we have to make an adjustment. We're dealing with some money, which we already know. We had to pay a quarterback. Everybody will pay a quarterback. Whatever's left, crumbs left over, we got to feed everybody else. We got a number one wide receiver in Stephon Diggs. That's good. We got a capable, good receiver in Gabe Davis. He just had an off year. I'm going to give him that. But what we have to do, and if we look at the beginning of the season when we played Miami and a lot of our young players that we drafted, we had two cornerbacks that was rookies playing out there. We had a linebacker like Terrell Bernard out there getting some reps. And we had other young players that was back there like Jaquan, like Hamlin, and like all these other little young guys. Those were nuggets on the salary cap that we had, that we were playing. We were winning with those guys. Now, when people started getting healthy later on in the season, we start implementing them back into the defense and start moving our young players out. No. In today's game, you look at Kansas City, all of those young players that was playing, those young rookies that was getting time. In today's world, and Steve and Chris, you guys really, really know, we saw the change. Young players are coming into the NFL ready to play now. It's no more sitting down after 3 years behind a starter. Those are the old days. These young kids are athletes. They're ready to roll. They're ready to get on a game and everything else. Now, the reason why I say that is, if we come in and make a couple adjustments, first of all, and the draft comes, we have to protect, and in this case, our president. So we got to get it some Secret Service. Josh Allen is the main thing. I will move Deion Dawkins off, move him from tackle to guard. Kick him inside. Now, our center, he might be a casualty cut. I'm sorry, he did a great job all these years, but we need that money. We can move the guy who's on our right guard that we just signed, we took away from Chicago. He could play center because he used to play before we had it as a backup. Now, in the draft, second round, you start going, get a lineman in the forefront. But that first round pick, you get a bell cow to go with Cook. That kid from Texas, that running back, big back, you get somebody like that to take the pressure off, Josh. You got a guy in the practice squad that I pray to God that they let get some rest. His name is Keyshawn Johnson from Fresno State. 6'1", the kid can flat-out play. You know, put him out there, implement him. McKenzie might be a casualty cut. Now, yeah. You bring Shaq Lawson and Jordan back. You let Terrell Bernard play in the linebacker with Milano. And you let your young players play. And I promise you, and I'm going to hang up on this, I promise you, looking at the Super Bowl like you guys did, here it is, Pat Mahomes won the game without a number one receiver because he's Pat Mahomes. The same thing with Josh Allen. Make the game simple for him. Let him operate on the offensive side. But like Steve said, we had a good offense. We did, Steve. But on the defensive side of the ball, that's where we're going to lose some free agents. Let your young people play, and then during the draft, Adam, maybe pick up some free agents, and let's move on, and we still can win. I love each and every one of you. Thank you so much for taking my call. Western New York, USA, I love you guys. Happy Valentine's Day, guys.
Thanks, Butch.
We are up against it, so we'll take a break here. We'll kind of reflect on some of Butch's comments, take more of your phone calls in hour number two. Dick and Lockport will lead us off in hour number two, and we'll tell you, we'll have more to say about this, but it looks like the Eagles are going to, in fact, lose each of their two coordinators this offseason to head coaching jobs. Arizona, ready to name Eagles DC Jonathan Gannon as their new head coach. We'll give you more when we come back here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Here we are, hour number two. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live is the show. Cardinals are finalizing a deal with former Eagles defensive coordinator Jonathan Gannon to become their new head coach, according to ESPN. It is the last head coach opening of the cycle, and as Steve and I were lamenting during the break, it means that the Bengals get their defensive coordinator back. Lou Anarumo was a finalist for that Cardinals job, but now he goes back to Cincinnati as DC. So,
and the NFL Coach of the Year gets both his defense coordinators back. Brian Daboll gets both Mike Kafka and Wink Martindale back as his.
Yeah, they were in the running for some other jobs.
Coordinators, which it looked like they might lose both of them.
Yeah, I never really thought Martindale was going to get that Colts job. He was interviewed there, I know, but what did they have, 12 candidates? I was like, I don't know.
But there's a bunch of coordinator jobs up for grabs now. Arizona obviously just hired, you know, Jonathan Gannon. They've got both those coordinator jobs up for grabs. Carolina has not chosen their offensive coordinator or their play caller. Sean Payton in Denver hasn't chosen any of his coordinators yet. Indianapolis needs their offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator still. And Philly lost both their coordinators to the head coaching jobs that we just mentioned. And then Tampa Bay needs an offensive coordinator and a play caller, and Ron Rivera needs an offensive coordinator and a play caller. A lot of jobs open around the league. It's that's the new currency right now is who your coordinators are.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not going to get a new head coach, let's change the coordinator. That's big. It used to, and you'd never do it. Now teams are doing a little bit more, mostly because of hires and all of that, but also some guys just leaving.
What we're doing here is telling you that Josh Allen was 79% of the team's total net yards this past season. What do you think it should be in 2023 and why? About the same, more, or maybe less? You can let us know on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live, or you can hit us up on the phone lines, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Open line for you there.
Once right before we went to break this last time, we got a call from Butch in Buffalo, and he went down the list. And what his, I think his main gist was, I was writing some stuff down. He's urging the Bills to, when they draft guys, to put them on the field. Khalil Shakir, they did it with Christian Benford, with Kair Elam. They also had Damar Hamlin, Jaquan Johnson, got a chance to play this year mostly because of injury. All of those guys really helped. And as the season wore on, you saw less and less of them. James Cook, great example as well. So there's a lot of, he felt like, and I think a lot of fans said this too, they wanted more from the draft picks this year. And they're looking at the Chiefs in the Super Bowl and had all those rookies playing, bunch of three rookies in the secondary,
yep.
Pacheco carrying the ball for them, all of that stuff.
Sky Moore. Touchdown.
So they had, you know, a lot of contributions from young players. I get it. You'd like to see that. You'd like to see guys do that and have them on the hook and say, hey, yeah, they're really going to help us. And I think at the end of the year, Khalil Shakir really did get a chance, actually got more opportunities and did well with them. Same thing with Cook. But in getting there, the Bills were so hard to beat this last year. And I don't know that they wanted to upset the apple cart too much or start rotating guys in or when they had guys that were, you know, they were winning games.
Yeah, but I think once you saw that maybe you weren't going to get the week-to-week consistency from people like Isaiah McKenzie or Gabe Davis, that was the time to turn the page and say, you know what, let's get Shakir on the field a little bit more. Let's incorporate James Cook into the passing game a little bit more. Get those rookies on the field more. They did it incrementally, and I think looking back, I wouldn't be surprised if hindsight is telling them, you know what, we probably should have gotten them more involved sooner rather than later, because the ceiling is higher on those two players, in my estimation, than it is on a player like McKenzie.
Maybe. But what are they going to do, go 13-3? Well, they did that, and they only lost by 8 points to three games
right.
total. They were humming along fine. Now, certainly
–
you could say this too, and I know this is where we all were. Coming down the stretch of this last season, it was like the Bills were getting crushed by some of the local media because of style points. Seriously, style points.
Well, I mean, they weren't winning in the same fashion that they were earlier in the season, and I think people looked at that and said, oh, is there a problem here? I think that was the main concern.
It's style points.
Yeah. I understand a win is a win is a win.
They're coming down the stretch. They're beating the Detroit Lions by 3, the Patriots by 14, the Jets by 8, the Dolphins by 3, and then the Bears game, of course, where they crushed that team. And then, you know, the Cincinnati thing happens and then New England happens. It was style points. And I can see this where the coaching staff says, listen, we're the better team in these games. We're not running off and leaving anybody, but there was no way in the Packer game that the Packers were coming back and beating us. They scored a late touchdown to get it to 10 points. They were not beating us. We're not changing anything. That kind of mentality. And I get it. Sometimes it comes back to bite you. The Minnesota Vikings, the Jet game. You know, you need a late field goal to beat the Detroit Lions. Or maybe not. Maybe that. What was it?
Yeah.
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 So all of that stuff happens, and you're thinking, man, we could just need to play a little better, because it takes the stress off our fans so they don't, you know what I mean? I'm just not there. The Bills are doing a ton of stuff right offensively and defensively as well. And injuries, turnovers, and drops. Three things that you can look at and say, wow, that the season is completely better, if it can be, after 13-3, if you just don't do that stuff. And I know injuries are going to happen. I know turnovers are going to happen at a point, but man, oh man, they turned it over sometimes like it was their job. And, you know, they still were winning games. So using their personnel, the philosophy they have had in place has been very good, because here's what happens. And here's why, and I get it. I wanted James Cook to be the difference maker too, and I wanted Khalil Shakir to get more opportunities as well. I'm all about it. But here's where I'm at. One of the benefits that we don't see that I think really I'm convinced exists for this coaching staff and the roster and the players in the locker room. When a guy like James Cook gets drafted in the second round, and he comes in, and he's like, okay, I'm gonna start taking handoffs from Josh Allen, and it doesn't happen. Because he's a rookie and they got Devin Singletary and Zach Moss ahead of him at the time. And they get the reps because they're here. They're the veterans. You got to earn it. So by forcing guys like Khalil Shakir and James Cook to earn their reps, let alone game reps in a game, playing time, just getting on the practice field and getting a chance to get in the rotation, man, it lights a fire under them when they go into this offseason. And when they're leaving this building for the last time after their exit interviews, they're going, man, I gotta get on it. I want to be on this team. I want to get on the field. That's big. That's big for the culture in the room. It's big for the culture in the locker room. It's big for these guys who you have great players and really gifted players like Cook to say, man, I got to really bring it every week or they're not going to let me play.
Yeah,
that's a big step, and it's a huge part of why this club gets guys to develop when other clubs have guys that are 5-year players that are the exact same guy than they drafted 5 years before. They're not different. And the Bills have some guys that are very different, not only years ahead, but from week 17 than they were in week 3.
Yeah.
It's a big difference that this coaching staff has had, and one of the reasons is they got to earn absolutely everything. And I know we're impatient as fans. Me, Brownie and I are too. But I think it's a huge plus, and it's a discipline thing that this coaching staff has. It says you're not going to get it until you earn it or until you're the best option after a guy goes down. Hmm. It's hard to do, and most teams don't have the stomach for it. But I think if you look back over the handful of years, it's obvious that it has paid big dividends for these guys. When they do get on the field and when they come back the next year, how motivated they were in the offseason to be the guy that gets the reps, it has really made a big difference.
Let's go back to the phones, and we go to Dick in Lockport next. There we go. What do you got for us, Dick?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. Steve, you mentioned about Josh being, when he was hurt, it was in the pocket. You remember Mrs. Peller? Where's the beef? We need some people up front there that's 325 plus to give Allen a little chance there instead of him having to run all the time. Another thing is Beasley. They didn't use him very much. They brought him back, and he was their bread and butter slot receiver that got him, you know, down the field when they needed that first down. And as far as the defense, a lot of missed tackles. I don't know what's going on there. But, yeah, I'd like to see Beasley come back and put him back in that slot.
Yep.
And let him do his job.
Yeah, right. I think goes Dick. 34 to 35 years old by the time we get to next season. So I don't think it's a lock by any means. I suppose if he wants to come back and they want to put him on a veteran exemption and have him on the roster as insurance, that's one thing. But he was on the practice squad until they had a bunch of injuries and could afford to add him back to the active roster. And even then, his time on the field was limited. I know that Cole at the end of the season said he'd be interested in coming back, but I think it's going to be largely predicated on how they address the position before they entertain that.
Yeah.
He is not at the top of the priority list at the receiver position, in my estimation. They have other decisions they have to make there, both in free agency and the draft. And knowing how tight money is, I can't see them using a veteran salary on Cole Beasley right at the jump.
They brought him back, I think, mostly as an insurance policy. They were getting.
Well, they knew something was missing.
They knew that they needed to make a run, and they wanted to have a guy here that would help them if they needed him, a guy that would be plug and play, and that's what Beasley was. I think Khalil Shakir at the end, he was the guy to go in before Beasley was. And only when Khalil wasn't available or McKenzie wasn't available did they put Beasley back in the game. He was an insurance policy at the end, and that's about it. So I think that's where that was. And it's, you're right. If you're going to have Josh stand in the pocket and throw the football and not have him run it and make him more of a pocket guy and do all of that and take a little bit of the burden off him running the football, yeah, your offensive line needs to be top-notch. And I think that's been the – right now, up in the first couple of weeks here in our offseason that we've been going through, this is the first week after the Super Bowl, the Bills' offensive line has been – I think job one for 90% of the people who have interacted with us. People just want them to get better on their offensive line. And if they do that, I'm sure there'll be marked results in the offensive output.
I understand where Dick's coming from, though, because we talked about it all season long, the lack of the easy button throws for Josh in the passing game. And Cole, for the previous two or three seasons, had been that easy answer. The bailout option, the safety valve, whatever you wanted to call it, Beasley was that for Josh for the better part of the prior three seasons. And when he was not adequately replaced, it prompted them to call him and John Brown back because they knew it didn't look the same. And so what you wound up with was an insurance plan that you kind of wanted to use but didn't use maybe enough because you weren't sure. And you're trying to incorporate Khalil Shakir into the mix, as you pointed out, and it just turned into this – it turned into a mix that was very difficult to blend, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think that's why fans were commenting this season when they were still winning, but it just didn't look the same. Offense looked a lot more difficult to execute. There seemed to be a lot more third and eights and third and nines, and Josh still somehow found a way to convert a lot of those, but it wasn't the third and fours easy button to Beasley. All right, first down, here we go again. Third and three, up, there's Beasley again. Okay, get 11 yards. Okay, move the sticks again. Here we go. And then right down the field, nine plays, 75 yards, touchdown.
And you know what it is? He's right. You saw Beasley a lot in 2021, a ton, man. He was there, he was there, he was there.
But don't forget, they also had Sanders here, along with Davis and Diggs. So it wasn't just Beasley, it was Sanders too. And then he's out of the equation, he retires. They don't bring back Beasley. I think they took too much out expecting younger guys to backfill, and it just never materialized.
Right, and that's right. And I think one of the things that made this offense feel different, because it was still massively productive, the thing that made it feel differently for Bills fans that they didn't like was the fact that there wasn't one guy that said, oh, third down, yeah, okay, there's another first down for Beasley. Oh, there's another first down for Beasley. Oh, there's third and six, yeah, there's Beasley. There was a different guy. It was, you know, Devin Singletary ran for it, or Josh ran for it, or it was McKenzie. It was a bunch of different guys that were getting this third down conversions because the Bills were number one in the league getting him. So they did that a lot differently. And he had a bunch of guys helping out rather than those dependable guys that gives fans a little bit of security that, hey, we can pick it up and that guy's really good at it. Mm-hmm. So I think there was I think there was a little bit of a sense for Bills fans that it was like, are we really that good, or are we just getting by on this, you know? Because mm-hmm. there was nobody that – because it was unpredictable, a little more unpredictable, which is a good thing for an offense to be when you're talking about how they attack a defense. But for fans, it's a little bit disconcerting because they don't know who to depend on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's one of those things.
It looked like a heavier lift.
It looked more difficult because you had a different guy doing it every play or every third down. So it's different, and that's something that fans had to get used to.
Josh Allen was responsible for 79% of the Bills' offense, their total net yards this past season. What should it be in 2023 and why? More, the same, or less? Back to the phones and to Mark in Alden next. What do you got for us, Mark?
Hey, Brownie, hi. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
And I love your guys' show, you and Scott, or Steve. I wanted to say I'm responding to how much Josh Allen should be, used in the up. I mean, I think he should be at least 50 to 60%. He is the man in charge. You know, he does make the, you know, get the ball out there, make the plays and get the guys doing. Guys need to catch the ball and not drop it, stuff like that, and get open. And another thing I just wanted to say is that I think that we need a little better offensive line. We need the guys to open up holes for our running backs because people complain about our running. You know, we need the holes there for our guys to get through and make plays. And we need some, you know, guys to at least protect Josh so that he's got a little more time to throw the ball and to make them plays. That's all.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate the call. So he's saying less, and he would be in the majority, Steve, because right now our poll on One Bills Live, what should Josh Allen's percentage of the total net yards be in 2023? More, the same, or less than the 79% it was in 2022? 69% of respondents are saying it should be less.
Yeah, that I don't know, though. And I see, because it seems so hard, you depend on Josh so much that, you know, it's too much. But that's the way it is in the league these days. Justin Herbert's higher than Josh. Joe Burrow's higher than Josh. Pat Mahomes is higher than Josh. Geno Smith is 77.7% of the Seahawks' yardage. It's just the way it is for a guy who takes all the snaps. That's how high that number is going to be. In our calculations, for total yards, the percentage is Burrow's got 82% of it for the Cincinnati Bengals. He leads the league. Josh is number five in the league, behind Mahomes, behind Herbert, behind Burrow, and Tom Brady, for a team that never ran the football and only threw it. That's just the way it's going to be, particularly if you're one of those lucky teams that has an elite guy. I mean, that's the way it's going to be. Mm-hmm. The guy's going to throw it all over the yard, and he's going to run it if he can. Here's the thing, too, that the guys you'd like to know what, you know, Lamar Jackson didn't finish the season. He missed too many games. Kyler Murray's less than 50% of contributed to the Arizona season because he didn't play all those games. You get these guys that can't hang in there. And a guy that's 6'5", 250, can kind of handle that physical burden and kind of keep in there.
Yeah.
You hate to use it. You hate to, you know, ride a good horse into the ground. But, man, oh, man, that's also kind of why you got him.
Yep.
Because those guys are capable of throwing it all over the yard and putting a defense on notice. You're going to have to let them do it. Now, certainly Josh and the run game has always been a balance that all of us have cringed at, just a lot like the Baltimore fans are cringing about Lamar Jackson. The guy can't finish the season. It's a balance. But that percentage is not going to go down, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think so. Probably be around the same at least.
Yeah.
We have to take a break here, but Jim in Rochester, Jim in East Aurora, you guys hang tight. You're going to lead us in to the next segment as we have more of your phone calls coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
right, Josh Allen was responsible for 79% of the Bills' total net yards on offense this past season. What do you think it should be in 2023 and why? More, the same, or less? You can tell us at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Back to the phones and to Jim in Rochester for this segment. What do you got for us, Jim?
Hi, guys. I watched the tapes. I've watched the All-22 for the last, since week, I believe, 9 of the Jets game. I went to that in New York. And I had to watch the All-22 after I went to it because that game was ridiculous. What I saw over the last 8 games is linebackers, number one, linebackers do not respect our play action at all. They're not coming up. It's not working. They're going to have to look into the RPO game. I believe Josh should be under center more. It doesn't have to be even, you know, 30%, 20%. But get him under center like, go back a little to the 90s, early 2000s when Peyton Manning run the power eye and do the fakes on that. That automatically will bring linebackers up. And number two is, I know you already know this, but Josh just isn't taking the check down to you. They're there. They're there for him because guys, they're playing the cover two shell and backpedaling. They're not respecting the run. So I believe we've got to maybe think about going into a power eye and do it, maybe putting Gilliam, I don't know if he's suited for that, but somebody in front of the tailback and run some play action that way. Get the linebackers coming up because they're not moving. It's not respected at all. And the one thing on defense that I noticed too is with Taron Johnson, teams are scheming to get an ISO block on him. Yep. And there's no way at 330-pound line.
Yeah, I think you're breaking up, Jim. So
all right, I'm good.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate the phone call. You make a lot of good points. I don't think this offensive line was suited to a power running style. There were some weeks where just controlling the line of scrimmage was a tall task. And so to ask them to just blow people off the ball with power running, I don't know how realistic that was, which I think is why you didn't see a whole lot of it this past season. I think you are 100% right about Josh not taking enough of the checkdowns. I don't know why that happened this year. He seemed to be a more willing participant in that part of the passing game in previous years. Maybe it was the absence of players like Sanders and Beasley, guys that he inherently trusted to kind of fill those roles. And the guys that were brought into larger roles to replace those guys maybe just didn't establish the same kind of rapport. But there were opportunities, and Josh just chose not to take them. And hopefully through self-scouting and film study, he'll realize that there were yards to be had there that were high percentage type plays that could have kept you on the field, moved the sticks, and he chose to take the lower percentage play further down the field, which also compromised protection because those are longer developing routes. So efficiency could really push this offense forward if Josh is more committed to sticking to it, at least as I see it.
Yeah, and when you take those checkdowns, the passes are higher percentage completion rates. You don't turn it over as much, and that's a plus thing as well. It gives you easier first downs and stays ahead of the sticks, if not giving you consecutive first downs. Yeah, as for Josh going under center, I don't know. I think the whole league is moving away from guys going under center. It's more of an afterthought for most clubs anyway because it's a throwing league anyway. So if you go under center and you start running it, teams are going to counter that. And you're right. The linebackers are going to come down because they're going to stop your run game. If they don't respect your play action, you should be able to run it better than the Bills were able to. Because they're getting a late jump on it. So
yeah.
All of that stuff goes into the mix. You're right. The stuff about going into power eye and all that, that's a step back for me in time. I don't know that that's innovative. Not that old stuff doesn't work nowadays, but I think it's a league that's blown way past lining up and out muscling guys. that's why run defense is more about gap integrity than it is about physicality anymore. That's why the Bills can play nickel defense with Taron Johnson, and you got teams scheming up 300-pounders pulling around inside of him, and the Bills got a good run defense anyway. You can't get the Bills out of their nickel defense, and the reason is because they got Taron Johnson. He's a scrappy, competitive, smart slot defender who can get down in the box and get dirty. He doesn't mind going in and submarining offensive linemen coming out, knowing that the rest of the defense is going to get it. Their run defense was better this year than it was a year ago, and that's mostly because of the defensive tackles. So you're right. The All-22 will tell you some things, mostly in the and even for you know, jamokes like me and Brownie, you can look and see, well, why did he should have thrown it here, you know, when he's launching it down the field and he's hanging on to it in the pocket, you've got options underneath. And I know that, you know, guys like Ken Dorsey and Joe Brady are telling him that.
And one other thing that Mike mentioned, he said, oh, they should get to the RPO game more. They ran RPOs, a good amount of them, as a matter of fact, through the course of the season. So it's not like this offense was devoid of the RPO game at all. They ran a good deal of that, quite frankly. They ran more of that in the absence of being able to execute a consistent screen game. They turned to the RPOs more often to kind of make up for some of that that we saw through the course of the season. Let's get back to the phones, though, and we go to Jim in East Aurora next. What do you got for us, Jim?
Hi, guys. I was just commenting on the Super Bowl, how much I enjoyed watching the line play, the offensive line play, especially of the Eagles. If in the play in particular that was very nice is when they took Jones and he body surfed him back about 4 yards, where he just, if you every play that they ran, you would watch them and they would get so low to off the ground, they were probably a foot off the ground, and they would just keep plowing forward. And if you get line play like that, your running game is automatically going to be better. And the only time I worry about Josh getting hurt is not when he faces the safeties and the defensive backs, but when he takes the pounding that he does from the defensive linemen and from the linebackers. We need offensive linemen that can get into that second level and wipe those linebackers out of there. I don't think we have enough of that going on. And if they beef up that line, I think a lot of their problems will be solved, and you'll see a big difference, not only in their running game, but Josh and his ability to check down, I think that'll come around also. Thank you for taking the time on the call.
All right, thanks, Jim. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't really.
You know, yeah. It's. Yeah.
I'm kind of.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I think a lot of people that are voting that Josh represent less of the total net yards on offense next year are concerned about his well-being. I think that's the main driving force of that vote. And then the other half of that voting party wants to run the ball more.
Right.
With somebody other than Josh.
Well, that's true. And when you worry about Josh's well-being, you know why, is because if he gets hurt and he has to come out of the game, you know, you're pretty much sunk.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Case Keenum, great guy, but he ain't Josh. Nobody, you know, that's it. There's going to be a big drop-off. You're going to have to change everything if Case Keenum comes on and starts taking a snap. Now, he's a free agent, so whoever it's going to be this next year, they got to get a guy. I get it, but that's the way it's going to be. As long as you have that guy as your quarterback, you're going to he's going to be at risk because he's going to play football, and that's what it is. That's what the game is. So I'm there. He's going to be the guy. He's going to be the reason you win. He's going to be the reason you lose, no matter how this goes. And if he's not on the field, yeah, we're all in the same boat.
Yeah. And, you know, going forward, we still know he's going to be the identity of the offense. That much is obvious. And, you know, a lot of what people are asking for, all of that gets easier if you invest in your offensive line. In the draft, probably even more so than in free agency, knowing some of the cap constraints that the team's dealing with. That's not to say they can't sign offensive linemen in free agency. I'm sure they will in some capacity. But It feels like the organization is being prompted based on some of the results and the successes of some of the teams that got the furthest in the playoffs, that making those investments there in the draft with rookie contracts to get affordable labor is paying dividends for those clubs.
Yeah, it's always been important, and we always get reminded of it at different times. After Josh's rookie season, we were like, man, we got to get him some offensive linemen. And they started doing that right away. That's why, you know, his second year they were in the playoffs, and they even got better after that. So with free agency and with guys they drafted, they have continued to try and bolster that. And I know that this last year they did a nice job of it. Really, they brought in a ton of guys that could really play. Saffold and Kessenberry were really good catches on the free agent market. They had Bates, Butker coming back from an injury, along with, you know, Spencer Brown, Tommy Doyle, and, of course, Mitch Morris and Ryan Bates. I mean, they had a ton of guys in the room that really looked like they were going to be good. And then, you know, you get to the end of the season, and, you know, guys that are long in the tooth kind of taper off. So I don't think they've forgotten how important the offensive line has proven to be over the course of Josh Allen's career. I don't think they're going to forget it this offseason.
Yeah. So I know the votes are heavily in favor of pulling down his total yardage responsibility in terms of the offense's total net yards, but I know Steve's in this boat based on what we've discussed the last 2 hours. It's probably going to be around the same going forward. And I saw, and we'll get to the tweet sheet here in the final segment, one of the better ones that I saw was, we don't necessarily need more of Josh Allen, we just need better Josh Allen. And that's taking the checkdowns and making more of the high percentage plays to keep the offense on the field to score even more points.
Tony Dungy said it a ton when they were playing. They kept getting turned away in the playoffs. You know, it was 8 years before Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl. But he said, listen, we're doing everything right. We just need to do what we do better. And that's a little bit of where the Bills are. It's not a sexy answer, and people don't want to hear it. They want to see some changes. But they need to do what they do and do it a little bit better to go a little bit further and play and get to the Super Bowl and win it. They are doing a ton of stuff. We've seen it over the last 5 years. We talk about it all the time. They are doing a ton of stuff right.
Yep.
Just don't start doing stuff wrong.
Fair enough. We'll take a break here, get some final thoughts on the tweet sheet next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, Josh Allen represents 79% of the team's total net yards from the 2022 season. Should it be more, about the same, or less for next season? You can tell us, but we're going to go to the tweet sheet now, brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. One of our listeners asked, what was Mahomes' percentage? He was a half a percent ahead of Josh at 79.7%, so right in the same general vicinity. William on the tweet sheet says, 79% is a recipe for disaster. Josh is just one good hit away from an injury that puts an entire season in jeopardy. If there's one player the Bills can't afford to lose, it's him. He needs more help from the players around him. Jack says, I don't want him to have to do more, but also don't want an offense that's run-based. Despite a bad day in January, numbers on offense were good this year. They won 14 games, and that's largely due to 17. If he cuts down INTs and they run effectively, they should be a bear to stop. Tank says, less. Get creative and get the ball in Cook and Hines' hands so defenses don't tee off on sacking the QB, causing Josh to take off running all the time. And Gazziker says, the same, only with less running and more passing. Josh could and should lead the league.
It ain't going to get less, folks.
No, it's not.
All the top quarterbacks in the league, including Jalen Hurts, are a ton involved in the yardage that their team gets by throwing the football, obviously. And whether you run it or throw it, I can get behind saying, hey, he needs to run less and throw more. I'm all about that. And you can start handing it to other guys to do most of the running for you. But this all gets us back to where we were today. And every day, get your O-line together and they'll run it better.
Luke summed it up perfectly. Get more protection and more weapons, and Josh can produce more
with less risk.
Oh, look at that. Smart.
Way to sum it up for us, Luke.
Way to go.
It only took us 2 hours. We'll see you tomorrow at 1:00.